This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Larry Holmes, was the world heavyweight champion from 1978 to 85. The only person who had held the title longer was Joe Louis. Holmes beat 9 world champions, including Muhammad Ali, Ken Norton, and Leon Spinks, and lost to Evander Holyfield and Mike Tyson. Larry Holmes grew up poor. He was raised in a shack with a corrugated metal roof, a red clay floor, and no plumbing in a small Georgia town where his mother picked cotton. She moved the family to Easton, Pennsylvania in 1956 when Larry Holmes was 6. He still lives in Easton, where he owns businesses and real estate. He's proud of being one of the few boxers who was able to hold on to his money and invest it wisely. Now he has a new memoir, written with Phil Berger, who used to cover boxing for the New York Times. Early in Holmes' career, from 1971 to 75, he was Muhammad Ali's sparring partner. He told me how he got the job.
Getting ready to go into the Olympics, Ali was looking for a training camp, and somebody sold him on the idea of Deer Lake. And he looked at it, liked it, and he moved to Deer Lake. And at that time, Ernie Butler, which was my trainer, knew Angelo Dundee. We went up there, and Ali happened to be putting on an exhibition that day and didn't have nobody to do it with. So therefore, I was a big guy and eager to learn, eager to get in the ring with Ali, a great fighter, a legend everybody knew of. And he took me down to Reading, Pennsylvania, and beat me up a little bit, but it was a great experience, and that's how we got to become good, pretty good friends.
So what was your job as Ali's sparring partner? Did you have to learn the moves of his opponents so you could fight him like they were going to fight him?
Well, no. My style was a unique kind of style. I almost fought like him, and my thing was to fight him. He wanted me to fight him to give my all because the guys that he was going to fight was going to do what they had to do to him. So he didn't choose me because of a certain style that I had. He chose me because I can take it, and then I could fight. That's why he chose me. At least that's what I think.
How often did you have to take it? I mean, how often
did you 4 years. I would say I took it for about 2.5 years boxing with Ali, but I was starting to get mine in. So the workouts got to be almost even. And I think when I left Muhammad Ali in 1975, I think I was doing a number on him. And it was time for me to move on to further my own career.
What are some of the moves you learned from working with Ali?
Well, when I was working with Ali, it was learning to where he pulled away from punches, where he ducked from punches, where he blocked punches. I learned the way he dealt with a lot of things, like people, you know. Just being around Muhammad Ali took me a lot. It taught me a lot of pride. It taught me a lot of discipline because he was one of the guys that really were disciplined. He was one of the person that he took everything seriously when he had to do it.
When Ali was fighting Frazier, you had to leave Ali, and you became Frazier's sparring partner. Would you explain what happened there?
Well, you know, what happened was Ali did not want a guy like me because I boxed more similar to him than anything. And Joe Frazier knew that I boxed similar to Ali, so therefore he called me. His people called me. And before I went to Joe Frazier and worked, I asked for permission from Muhammad Ali and what he think. Would he be mad at me if I went down and worked for Joe Frazier as a sparring partner? And he says, yeah, you can go work for Joe Frazier. He said, but you can't tell him nothing. So I done that, and it was very interesting in working with Joe Frazier because he was a different kind of a pressure fighter. Joe Frazier would try to kill you every second. I mean, you know, I remember the times that he cracked my ribs and I had to continue to fight with him. But it was a different kind of experience that I welcome, and I'm glad I took. But even though I was working for Joe Frazier and he was paying me, I was still rooting for Muhammad Ali because it seemed like he had a little bit more charisma. He took to me a lot more than Joe Frazier. And it was just great working for Muhammad Ali. And as a matter of fact, it was great working for Joe Frazier. I learned a lot from both guys. It's two different individuals. They both had their own different attitudes and ways they did things. And I just like Muhammad Ali's ways more because I guess he had he had the more of the world on his side than Joe did.
And one other Ali question. Was Ali ever theatrical in the ring when he was just sparring with
you? Oh, yeah. Come on, boy. Come on. Fight. Come on. You ain't got nothing. You're eating. You're sleeping. And I'm paying you. And you can't do nothing. Come on. Show him. Take this. Take that. Yeah. At that time when he was telling me all that stuff, I was taking it because I was learning his ways. And he was beating me up a little bit. But I was determined to stay out there with him.
My guest is Larry Holmes, former heavyweight champion. He has a new autobiography, which is called Against the Odds. When you started fighting professionally, what did you think of as your best moves?
My jab. My jab was the best thing, that my best weapon, my lateral movement, side to side, back and forth, to keep fighters off balance. And I felt that if I could do that for a extended amount of time, I would be fine, because I didn't believe in getting hit. Because I adapted, copy, or whatever you want to say, after Muhammad Ali, the way he moved his head, the way he pulled away from punches, the way he blocked punches, I adapted that, and I was pretty good at that. So I felt that if I can continue to win, I would have a great chance of being the heavyweight boxing champion of the world.
Now, you were used to Ali. You were used to his showmanship. I mean, he was so loved for being this big flamboyant figure in boxing. And my impression is that's not in your character to have those kinds of theatrics. So how did you feel when you started boxing? Did you think that somehow you needed a kind of bigger, showier personality? You needed to bring those theatrics in to really be loved by the boxing fans?
I thought that, and I thought if I do it, I'd be damned if I do it, because I tell you, when I did try to do that or try to rhyme or make poems or try to fight like a certain, like Muhammad Ali a little bit, people say, you copy Muhammad Ali. Get your own thing. You can't fight like Muhammad Ali. It was only one Muhammad Ali. And that really haunted me. You know, one of the hardest things was is to win the title, and then I had to follow behind somebody as great as Muhammad Ali was. And Muhammad Ali was one great individual. I mean, you couldn't light a candle to him because he was Ali. I mean, if I say, I don't make poems, but name is Holmes, they think I'm riding like Muhammad Ali. Oh, man, I don't want to hear that, Muhammad Ali, you know. So everything was Muhammad Ali. People couldn't get that figure, the imagination that I was Larry Holmes, and he was Muhammad Ali. And I didn't know. I was in between a rock and a hard place. I didn't know which way to go. So I just done what I had to do, and that was to win fights.
If you would remember for us the highlights for you, the most vivid parts of the first heavyweight title fight that you won.
Well, I tell you, the first fight I won as a heavyweight contender was when I won the heavyweight title. And when that was in June 9th, 1978, when I stepped in the ring with Ken Norton to fight him, because we had a lot of animosity going. And, you know, I was one of those guys at that time, I wanted to beat him up. I wanted to win. I wanted to, you know, I just let everything get to me. And I tell you, I came out with the record, Ain't No Stopping Me Now, that McFadden and Whitehead made. And that record,
that's kind of like your theme song.
My theme song. And I tell you, that record came out just in time for me, because I felt that this is a good record. It Ain't No Stopping Me Now is everything I ever try to do. Somebody always try to hold you back. And that record had all the words that I needed in there. And I wanted to go out there and use that record. Fighters now are using music, but I was the first to use music on the ring with. So fighting Kenny Norton for 15 rounds, he didn't like me and I didn't like him, and the people were hollering and screaming, and everybody knows Kenny Norton and very few people know Larry Holmes. So, you know, I was like the underdog, and that was one of the hardest fights that I ever fought.
You say there's a lot of animosity between you. Was it something personal, or was it just that you both wanted to win?
We both wanted to win, and I think it was personal. I didn't think Kenny liked me from the beginning, because I was one of them young, cocky kids that was saying, these guys are afraid of me, and they won't fight me. And I would mention the Kenny Nortons and everybody else. And when that day came that it was a mandatory that he must fight me, because I was the number one contender in the world, I don't think Kenny Norton liked that, because he didn't want to give me that opportunity, because he felt probably my style of boxing would beat him. So he didn't like me, and I didn't like him either because he didn't want to give me the opportunity to be able to say I'm fighting for the heavyweight championship of the world.
Now, you say in the book that right before the 15th round, I guess it was, you know, your manager said to you, you know, you could go easy on this because you're winning.
I'm winning the fight.
You're ahead, so you could just take it easy on this. And then you had to decide whether you should kind of withhold your power in that round or really give it your full force. How did you calculate in your mind what to do there?
Well, I'm a fighter, and I thought comfortably I was winning the fight. I thought I had won by 4 or 5 rounds more than he did, and I thought they was going to clear me as a winner. But Kenny Norton came at me so hard, trying to kill me, and I wanted to try to get him back. Every time he threw a punch and land, I wanted to throw two back. You hit me once, I'm going to hit you twice. You hit me once, I'm going to hit you 3 or 4 times. And it went back and forth like that. So that's why I would say that probably was one of the great fights of all time, because for 15 rounds, we fought. It was no lollipopping out there, a lot of gagging out there. We were actually fighting. And if I would not have done that, when my trainer said to me that, you know, you got this fight, just stay away, stay out of trouble. If I didn't go out and fight him, I would have lost the fight. I would not have been the heavyweight champion of the world. And I think my dream would have went down. From there on, I went on and held that title for 7.5 years because I did not want to give anybody the opportunity to beat me and not fight my best fight.
If you're just joining us, my guest is former heavyweight champion Larry Holmes. He has a new autobiography. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Larry Holmes is my guest, former world heavyweight champion. Now he has a new autobiography, which is called Against the Odds. You say when you became the champ that you found there were a lot of, quote, favors expected of you, kickbacks, payoffs, what kinds of things?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, like when I was dealing with Don King at that time, Don King would want 25% of the dollars, and he will want...
When he was promoting a fight?
Yeah, he was promoting a fight, and he will want the right to promote the fight. Therefore, he wanted exclusive on Larry Holmes, and I take what he give me or don't take anything at all.
Did you see a lot of corruption in boxing?
Corruption is only when they don't like you and don't give you the decision. The corruption is never between two fighters. The corruption is when two managers don't see eye to eye and they're fighting over the guys who are going to judge the fight and referee the fight. And then you guys are going to be more favored to his guy and your guy, and that's the corruption. And if they don't like you, they don't give it to you.
Were you ever asked straight out to throw a fight?
No, never. Because they know the kind of person that I am. You know, I mean, I go down with, I fought with broke hands and cut eyes and stuff like that. They know that Larry Holmes will go out there and give it his all, 100%.
My guest is former heavyweight champion Larry Holmes. He has a new autobiography called Against the Odds. You faced Ali in the ring when Ali was, I think, 38 in 1980. How did you feel about going into the ring with him for the first time, not being his sparring partner, but his opponent in the ring?
Well, I told Ali, you know, it's a business situation. It's a business deal. Your mind is making a date your body can't keep, Ali.
You didn't think he was up to the fight?
No. I didn't think he could beat me because I knew him. I thought he was up to fight. I had worked with him as a sparring partner for 4 years. I've been around him. He was my idol. I knew what he could do and what he couldn't do. So therefore, I just told him that, you know, get the money.
Did you try to go easy on him because you thought he...
At first, I didn't. At first, I wanted to hit him hard. I wanted to surrender him, you know, down, make him weak so that he don't have no chance to hurt me. And then after about fourth or fifth round, I started taking it easy, saying to him, why take it anymore? You can't win.
You said that to him in the ring?
Yes. And he said, shut up, boy, I'm knocking you out. Fight. I'm knocking your ass out. Uh-huh. You can't fight. Called me every name in the book. And that was one of the things that shocked me and surprised me because all the time that I was with Muhammad Ali, I never heard him swear like that, curse at me or anything. And when I fought him, I heard everything in the, under the sun come out of his mouth, and that knocked me out in itself.
Now, I think Ali didn't win a single round in that fight.
No, he didn't win.
How did that affect your popularity?
Well, I think my popularity increased because I was now out of the shadow of Muhammad Ali. It wasn't what about Muhammad Ali anymore. It was about Larry Holmes. And the way I won the fight without being a mercenary, you know, I didn't try to kill him. I went out there and did what I had to do to win the fight, and it was no, I'm killing you, you know. I think people respected me because they could see what I was doing.
Did winning change your relationship with Ali?
No. I don't think, and as far as I'm concerned, I don't think so. I don't know if it changed in this book or not, but I always respected Muhammad Ali. I always talked to him, and we always had a good relationship. Now, after he left me, I don't really know, but he always treated me with the utmost respect.
My guest is former heavyweight champion Larry Holmes. He has a new autobiography. Now, you were diagnosed, you say, with a slipped disc before your fight with Leon Spinks, and you were told by your doctor
Michael Spinks.
Michael Spinks, sorry,
no
Leon's
problem.
Brother. Yeah. So, and you were told by your doctor that if you threw a punch with your right hand, you might rupture your spinal cord and permanently paralyze yourself. Mm. You heard that and you still went into the ring?
Well, because, you know, I haven't set myself up in a position. I have taken these guys' advances, and we had a show to go on, and our show must go on. I was one of those guys that say show must go on. And in spite of what might happen to me, I said, let's do it. And I don't know if that was true or false, or if I did hurt myself. I know I'm having some pain in my shoulders here and there. And I went on out there and did what I got to do. I thought, even though I didn't deliver like I should have, I thought I won. I did enough to win the fight. But my doctors said, yeah, you can go for it, but it's a chance you take it. But he also said there's a chance that you always going to take, even when you walk across the street. He said, those are the risks that we take in our lives. So I made the decision to go ahead with it. But it did bother me in my mind because I wasn't able to deliver the punches that I thought I should, because that being paralyzed kept popping up in the back of my mind. And I thought that was the wrong thing for them to do to me, especially a week before the fight.
You mean to tell you that?
To tell me that.
Would you rather they didn't tell you that?
Yes. If they didn't tell me that, I would have still been heavyweight champion of the world because I lost the decision.
Yeah, but you might have been paralyzed, right?
And then I would have been paralyzed. But I wasn't paralyzed, and I did fight. So if I'd have fought without thinking about what was going to be a problem with me, I probably would have done much better than what I did.
I don't know. If I were you, I think I would have preferred to know and...
You prefer to know afterwards. I mean, if you're gonna do it, you're gonna do it. You know, you don't need to know about what's wrong with you. I mean, if you're gonna die, you know, you say, "Well, I'm gonna do this, or I ain't gonna do this. I want to live my life." I'm saying, "I'm gonna have fun."
At least
first.
It's your choice.
Yeah.
At least you decided to take that risk as opposed to taking it, you know, in ignorance, and then finding out after the fact if you were really hurt that it's something you could have avoided.
Right.
Suing the doctor, the whole bit.
No, I wouldn't. You know, I wouldn't do that because, you know, it would be my choice, choice of how I feel and if I think I should do this or not.
Well, you lost that fight with Michael Spinks.
I lost that fight with a split decision, very close. And as I said, I was the champion. I should have won. Even with the second fight, I thought I won, but they said I lost it. But those are the choices and those are the games that people play in boxing, as I was saying to you earlier. People, if they don't like you and they don't want you in there anymore, they want to get you out of there, and that's the way they do it.
You know, I'm thinking that people do a lot of different things for money, and often those things aren't easy things. Mm-hmm. But the things that you've had to do require not only, you know, like risking your health in the ring, but taking a lot of pain. And I'm wondering, I guess a boxer needs to really know how to take pain, no matter how good the boxer is. How do you deal with pain before, you know, while you're fighting and then after the fact? I mean, while you're fighting, it's probably a lot of adrenaline that masks the pain. But after that?
I never dealt with pain.
You never dealt with pain?
I never dealt with pain during a fight. I deal with pain after the fight.
Right. Is that because you don't feel it during the fight?
You feel it, but you block that out. And you don't really worry about it. You do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember me going in the ring with a broke hand and fighting with a broke hand and the pain that you had have to endure. And I knew that I would be able to overcome it, you know, if I just put my mind in the right setting. And that's what I did. But afterwards, it hurts. Mm-hmm. It takes a day or so to get the pain out of you. You take your hot bath, and your jacuzzi, and your rub down, and your Nuprens, and you hope that they go away, you know? And after that, you just try to live every day normally. But it's a mental thing, too, that you have to go through after that. Your mind, how the fight went. You kind of like relive that a couple more times. And then after you do that and get that out of your head, then it's back to normal.
Larry Holmes is the former world heavyweight champion. His new autobiography is called Against the Odds. We'll talk more in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with former world heavyweight champion Larry Holmes. He held the title from 1978 to 85. He has a new autobiography called Against the Odds. You're planning on going into the ring with George Foreman. When is the fight scheduled?
The fight is January the 23rd in Houston, Texas. They call it a George Foreman birthday bash. So you know what that means. I am not the favorite. I'm not the one who's supposed to win the fight. And I'm the one who's supposed to be getting the bashing.
Now, how old is Foreman?
George will be 50, and I just turned 49 yesterday.
Okay, you can explain this to me. You're two middle-aged guys going into the ring, two, I think, really likable personalities in the world of boxing. And I'll be honest, now, it might just be me, but it really makes me want to flinch, to think of you two guys
that still can fight.
The age of 50 or approaching it.
Yeah, and still can fight. You know, that's the mind-boggling of the thing. We still can fight. And the reason why we still can fight is because we have taken care of ourselves. George Foreman has taken care of himself by retiring for 10 years and not fighting anyone. I have taken care of myself by not getting beat up by these guys while I were fighting and by staying in good condition, by not abusing my body and mind. And that's how, the reason why we still can do it. And I think another reason why we can do it, because the money that they're paying.
Isn't there maybe a voice in your head saying, listen, you've made it this far, you're almost 50, you've made it in really good shape and really good health through, a really successful boxing career. Why press your luck?
Well, because my other voice in my head keeps saying, it ain't gonna happen to you. You're gonna be okay. And we have to think that way. And I work that way. I train that way. I make sure that I feel that way when I go into the ring. I don't take the negative. I take the positive. If anything happens, it's going to happen to George.
No. You know what the doctor told you a while back? That if you fought, you had a ruptured disc in your spine. If you fought, you might end up paralyzed. Is that still a risk, or is that all healed up?
No, that's no risk, and I don't think it ever were a risk. But, you know, one of the things that I came into my favor that I'm not afraid anymore of pretty much nothing. I'm not afraid of the death. I'm afraid of being handicapped and somebody have to take care of me, and I don't want that to happen. But as far as me checking out of here, I'm not afraid of that because I lost people in my family, my father, 52, my brother, 55, my one brother, 5. So, you know, I just take every day as a day because tomorrow will not be promised to me. So I just hope that I just keep right on going and hope and pray that nothing happened to me so that I can just continue to take care of my family.
Larry Holmes is my guest, former world heavyweight champion, and now he has a new autobiography called Against the Odds. Now, I think it was only pretty recently that you learned how to read.
I still am not the best reader because, as I said, I dropped out in the 7th grade. I read better to myself like everybody else, but I don't read out loud real well. But I read enough to get by. My contracts and things like that, I go over them, I read them. And if I have questions, I'm never too ashamed to ask somebody to help me, because it was one of my likings that I had when I was in school. It was one of my things that I didn't like to do in school, was to read, because the teacher would say, stand up in class and read. And when I did that, and if I made a mistake or didn't know work, other kids laughed, and I didn't want to be laughed at. So I think school was pretty hard for me. But now I know the difference. I know that I need to know this, and I need to know a lot of things, because I do run a multi-million-dollar business up there in Easton with the courthouse and the banks and everything else. And I got dollars coming in, and I want to see the dollars coming in. I want to see the dollars going out, and I don't want nobody else to handle them yet.
Was there a period of time when you covered it up, that you couldn't read, when you didn't want anybody knowing, you'd kind of fake it? Or
yeah, I covered it up. People didn't know I couldn't read. I did cover it up.
How?
just let somebody else read it. you know. I always could read somewhat, so I might couldn't read a whole sentence or something, but I could read some parts in it and go by it from there.
Did you ever get in trouble because you couldn't read well? Ever sign a contract you shouldn't have signed, or misread a sign, or whatever?
No. I signed contracts with Don King that I knew wasn't right, that I had to sign.
But it had nothing to do with reading.
But it had nothing to do with reading.
Right.
But, you know, either you sign this or you're out the door. You know, I signed it today. Okay, you know, I live with it later on.
You have an autobiography now, which was written with Phil Berger, who is the New York Times former boxing reporter and is the author of another book about boxing. Can you read the book?
Yes, I read the book in spots, because I'm a slow reader. I like to take my time and read the book, and I don't like that. I'm always in a hurry. So my wife reads the book. You know, every page, my wife read this book. And sometimes I just say, let's read the book. Read it to me again.
Mm-hmm. Must feel good to have a book.
I tell you what, it feels good to have anything in my position, because I tell you, so many people say I couldn't do anything. Now I got a book out. Just think if I get a movie next, you know? I mean, you can never say never with a lot of stuff, because you never know what might happen for you. God got the plan, and he's the best of planners. I don't care how many people are out there today that say you can't do something. That man upstairs, boy, he worked miracles, wonders for you. And so, therefore, I never thought that I would be heavyweight boxing champion. I didn't get into boxing to be heavyweight champion. I got into boxing to make some money, to try to better myself and have a family, and that was it. I got lucky. I got lucky as far as realizing what I could get if I continue to do it and if I work hard on it. And that's how, I guess that's the reason why this book has come to light.
So one last question. Are you training already for your Foreman fight?
Yes, I've been training. I tell you, they had me running around for the last year and a quarter. Waiting for George Foreman to step in the ring with me. So I've been doing a lot of work, because I'm not the favorite. I'm not the favorite son here. I'm not a dog.
You nervous about the fight with Foreman?
I'm not nervous as of yet. I'm not gonna say it's not gonna. I'm not gonna get nervous. But as yet, I think I'm gonna have a good time out there. I tell you the truth, because George is big, he's strong, and he's slow, and he is hard. And everybody say he's big, he's strong. Well, I'm not just a little boy myself. So I think it's going to be a great night. It's going to be a great fight. And I think I'm going to be victoriously.
Larry Holmes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Larry Holmes' autobiography, written with Phil Berger, is called Against the Odds.